So welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming. Is there anybody who's here for the first time? So just to let you know, we're not going to make you say anything, don't worry. But you can if you want. Now, just to say that the format is after the meditation, and before I begin giving a formal talk, there's an opportunity for questions. So if anybody has any question, whether you're a beginner or old-timer, just any questions anybody may have about the actual practices of meditation, sitting, walking meditation, loving-kindness meditation, or as important, more important questions about how do we bring these teachings and practices into our daily life, into our relationships, our work, all the things that we deal with in life, so we can significantly live better lives. Happier, freer, more open, spacious, all that good stuff, which is often not that easy or that apparent. So please feel free to ask any question you want without being shy or self-conscious. Which means if you perceive of yourself as a shy or self-conscious person, definitely ask a question so you can get over it. We're here to get over things. So good. Are there any questions? Please take a moment just to think about your life. When I ask that, do you all feel relaxed, or do you sort of feel like you're in school and afraid the teacher's going to call on you or something? Anyhow, so does anybody have any questions about practice? Everybody's clear about practice. Good. An enlightened group. So what we're continuing to deal with is this book of from Thich Nhat Hanh, his calligraphy, and kind of using his calligraphy as a way to understand his teachings. Even though these are very short and brief, they are quite meaningful. And we've gone through a number of them over the months here and other sanghas. This is a nice one. What is your name? Anita, could you just read that for everybody? You can't see it. No. But you're doing it. It's smile. Everybody see that? So that's Thich Nhat Hanh's little mantra. Smile. So, what does smile have to do with Buddhist practice? I mean, many people think of meditation practice, Buddhist practice, the uprooting of suffering, as something very what? Serious. This is serious, deep stuff, right? And the last thing we should be caught with is a smile on our face, right? Certainly, and in a certain way, you know, a case could be made for not smiling, right? I mean, when one looks at the world, you know, not only the world of the whole world, but the world of even local communities and individuals, families, you know, we can't help but notice that there is a lot of difficulty in this world. A lot of our fellow human beings, you know, have very difficult lives, suffering from all kinds of deprivations and problems and situations, just according to natural circumstances, And then if we add on to that the inhumanity that people perpetrate on one another, et cetera, et cetera. And then we add sickness and disease and, right? Global warming. And then we could add politicians and politics and, you know, there's certainly a case could be made for what? Not smiling. I don't think it'd be right. I think Dave could make a good case. The last thing in the world we should be caught doing is smiling these days, right? Right, we should have a perpetual frown on our face. We should be raising our hand in anger, right? Most of the time, from what we perceive in this world, right? So how dare he say, smile. Dave is probably thinking, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I'm making you a fall guy. Yeah. Good. But, you know, remember Thich Nhat Hanh. He's a very interesting man, for those who don't know him. You know, his early monkhood in Vietnam. He first grew up when he was young during the time of the French occupation of his country and the Indo-Chinese War that was very quickly replaced by the American War of Vietnam. His Buddhism, his engaged Buddhism, was cultivated in the very crucible of suffering, of a civil war, a violent war, occupying powers, great suffering to his country, to civilians. He was sent into exile because his life was in danger. He saw many of his disciples and students and fellow monks killed. Assassinated. He spent 30 years in exile in the West, lived through many, many, many difficulties. And yet he says, smile. And I think if I was speaking for him, I think he would say, it is because of the misery and the unhappiness that human beings inflict on one another and on themselves. And because so many people have lost the capacity for true happiness, true peace of mind, out of which a smile is naturally generated, that in a certain way, you know, this is not a smile. This is important to understand. You know, a Buddha, a well-made Buddha, is an interesting image, because a well-made Buddha, as this one is, even though this is a copy, you can see in it. It should have an equanimity, a peacefulness, a balance. And if you notice, the lips have a very, what is often called like a half smile or a quarter smile. It's not ha ha ha. It's not watching the Comedy Channel. It's not that kind of laughing out loud from something funny. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's a certain kind of happiness or smile. But it's a smile, it's a half smile that just comes out of an inner peace and inner joy, an inner sense of well-being, right? We could say that is the smile of the Buddha. And that is the smile that this calligraphy is referring to. It is a smile that says, yes, everything you just said about the world is true. And yet, what? What?
Smile.
Smile because, not again, we're not trying to impose a smile on top of this. You know what I mean? Like patch a smile onto it. But because even though all this is going on, at the same time, what? Each of us has the capacity, no matter what is occurring in the external world, to generate within oneself a state of well-being, a state of mindfulness, a state of happiness. Now, that may sound strange to some people. And for those of us who take our peace of mind, find our happiness in life, in the ups and downs and the things of the world, this would be impossible, right? Because things in the world go up and down. Things go well and things don't go well. Things work and things don't work. We gain, we lose, right? We have success, we have failure. They love us and they don't love us. We love them, they don't love us. You know what I mean? It goes on and on. So in terms of the activity of the world, it is always changing. It is impermanent, it is always going up and down. So it's very difficult if one is totally externally driven, as we say, to find a consistent source of happiness and well-being and ease with that kind of life. Right? If one is only attending to the things of these life, if one is only attending to one's thoughts, and one's thoughts are always what? Changing. Right? Constantly changing. Coming and going. That is their nature. Our mind states, our emotional states, also instable, up and down, right? Constantly changing. So what is the basis for the human being to find the capacity within all this change and up and down? Again, not even talking about the inhumanity of life and challenges and difficulties of life. Where does one find that place of well-being, right, from which a smile can naturally and spontaneously manifest on one's lips? It is only through the practice of mindfulness, which mindfulness allows us to touch life as it is in the present. Because most of what I've talked about is thought, is the way we're perceiving, thinking about, dramatizing life. But when you let go of that and you return to the simplicity of one's present experience, which is what we do when we come here in meditation, what do we find out? And again, I would say to each of you, no matter how much drama you've had in your life today, no matter how much drama you've had in your week, no matter how much good things, bad things is going on in your family and all that, right? Each of us have the capacity of sitting down, right? Stopping, coming back to our breath, coming back to our hearing, smelling, sensing, right? And that over time we learn to develop the capacity that immediately what? Is calming, is clarifying. Right? So to know that no matter what is going on in the external world, one has the capacity to stop, and simply by returning to one's awareness, to one's breath, to one's capacity to be present to sensations, one will immediately enter into a much calmer, more peaceful space. When one knows that the thoughts that are arising in our mind, the feeling states that are arising in our mind, do not need to be grasped at. They can be let go of. Right? All of a sudden they lose their power to rob you of your happiness and peace and well-being. Thoughts come and go. Right? For those of you who were sitting in meditation tonight for 35 minutes, how many thoughts did you have in 35 minutes?
A lot.
A lot. More than 10?
Probably.
Probably more than 100? Yeah, let's say. And was there rhyme and reason to them? No. They just come and go. All of a sudden, the thought appears about this, and when that one goes, the thought appears about that, and then it'll be this and that, right? They're all over the place. Just bubbling up. Like bubbles that bubble up in soda. Right? And if you let them go, what happens? They pop. When you know that, and your mindfulness has the capacity to let them come and go without grasping, without getting involved, without making more story, more drama, ruminating, obsessing, you know, all that stuff, your mind has the capacity for what? Peace, calmness, well-being. And out of that, what happens? You smile. But again, it's a smile of well-being. It's a smile of ease. Now, somebody might say, I can hear my esteemed friend over here saying, but how can you be at ease? Especially a guy like Dave, you know, knowing the Republican convention is coming, right? It's infuriating. I mean, how can you be at ease? And I would say to Dave, well, you know, whether you like it or not, they are coming, Dave. Right? Right? Right, and you know, and if you are so dismayed by the opposition, why do you let them disturb your peace of mind and rob you of your well-being? You're giving them too much power. Right? I mean, you can disagree with somebody politically, right? You can seriously disagree with somebody politically, and yet have a calm heart. We don't have to hate. There will always be opposition. That is the nature of politics, isn't it? That is the nature of this world. Everything creates its opposite. Right? When you have this, there'll be somebody opposed to it. Right? You have a ceiling, you have to have a floor. You can't have a floor without a ceiling. Right? You can't have up without down. You can't. If you have Republicans, you'll have Democrats. If you have a right wing, you'll have a left wing. And that's just the way it is, isn't it? There are sunny days and there are cloudy days. There's up, there's down. If you have success, you're going to have failure. You can't have both. I mean, only one, right? So when you know that, you don't let this stuff... You want to let the world in enough that you keep your humanity and you can deal with the world intelligently and compassionately, you know, stand for social justice and all the good things, right? Do your best to save this planet from what it's up to. Try to deal with the greed and, you know, insensitivity and all that stuff. But at the same time, you understand what? It is the way it is. Why? Because of cause and effect. Because it's all human beings and their minds and their delusions and their greed and their self-centeredness, and they create the world that they create, don't they? Do we have an enlightened world? Are we surrounded by enlightened people? Everyone is highly enlightened and open-hearted, compassion, their minds and hearts are free of all discrimination and judgments. Everybody cares about their brother and sister and sees the suffering of others as no different than the suffering of themselves. And, you know, everybody works for the well-being of the whole. Is this the world that we live in? No. It would be nice, wouldn't it? And certainly it's something in our life that we could do anything we can to help. But at the same time, we understand what? We have to work with the world as it is. Yeah. And then work out from that. Thich Nhat Hanh would say, it is because so many people are suffering. It is because so many people have lost the capacity to be happy. That is why we must be happy. Right? It is a necessity that those who practice a spiritual path, those who practice a path of understanding and compassion, those who want a better world, have to become it in our lives. We have to show, you know, I mean, we can, you know, people can rail on about consumerism and the empty values of our society and greed, you know, all that stuff. But it is, if we are not in our lives manifesting a different way, right, and showing that one has the capacity of being deeply happy and at ease, right, without all the trappings, then if we have that capacity, then we really have something to share with the rest of humanity. But even short of full enlightenment, please remember to smile. I think when you put your lips in a smile, it's hard to be unhappy. Right? You know, just smiling. When you sit in meditation, when you do walking meditation, just check your face. You know, do I have a smile on it? And you do it, I think if you do it, you will find that you will feel better. Because I think smiling is also a relaxing to the facial muscles. So I think it's probably good for the face to smile. And, you know, I mean, when you're going around your day, and when you run into somebody who's got a genuine smile, not a phony smile, but a real smile, that they're happy. How do you feel when you encounter such a person? Well, you liked it, right? So why don't we be those kind of person for other people? There's a little poem he wrote. He says, "I have lost my smile, but don't worry, the dandelion has it." Kind of sweet little poem. But I think that could have many meanings. Because it could be times, right? We all may find there are times when we have lost our smile. We've gotten down, we've gotten grumpy, frustrated, stressed, right? We've lost our smile. We need at that moment to come out of ourselves. To come out of yourself and notice what? The dandelion. Oh, the dandelion is there. How wonderful. But that could mean what? You know, you look up and you see the sky. Oh, I was so caught up in my own little drama. And look, the sky is still there. Right? The clouds are still floating. The blueness is there. There are still trees. There are flowers. There are people. You know, when we come out of ourselves and we notice things of simplicity and yet beauty, that helps restore us. So please use your mindfulness in a skillful way. Right? And I think it is important, especially if you have a life which maybe has a lot of difficulties. You know, it's interesting. A lot of times when people go through difficult times, they do the wrong things. You know? Like, let's say they're very stressed or they're going through a lot of difficult times, so they kind of just get themselves even busier, and then when they have downtime, they just do things that don't restore them. right? You know, they veg out in front of TV, or they go shopping, or they eat, or you know what I'm saying? They do things that don't really restore them. I think one of the things, and I've noticed that about Thich Nhat Hanh, he's very good. I remember when I first met him in the 70s when, you know, the Vietnam War was going on. He was living in Paris, you know, and the news was only bad. I mean, every day, letters would come from Vietnam, and it would be all about refugees killed because they're in the line of fire, and orphans, and, you know, just all kinds of no food, you know what I mean, as the two sides were killing each other, the basically civilian population, especially in the countryside, were suffering incredibly. And he had a kind of, he was raising monies to help them. So, you know, you'd pick up your mail every day of 10 or 20 letters, and it would only be suffering, right? And need. And yet you're 1,000, you're 7,000 miles away. You know, so very... and he would often just go for walks. And he walked very slowly in the streets of this Parisian suburb. And he would stop and he'd look at trees and the sky and flowers. And then he'd come back. And you could see he was restored. Because he realized he needed to touch, in this case, the dandelion. You know, I've lost my smile, but don't worry, the dandelion has it. So again, if we have a very strong and deep practice, when we're going through difficult times or emotionality, our own meditative practice, mindfulness practice, can be restorative. But sometimes we can't do it, right? We need to do something else, to touch something that can bring a smile to our lips, that can remind us, right? Because it is a strange world. You can go to the hospital and there'll be people in the hospital who are in life and death dramas, right? And they and their loved ones and friends are, you know, it's like that. And yet you come outside and what? Sky is still there, the clouds are still there, people are walking around, right? Children are playing. That's just the way it is, isn't it? And they're both true, aren't they? And we can use our capacity to be present to that dandelion side of life. So we are more able to deal with the dark side of life. Is that clear? And that is available to all of us. We know people in the darkest situations have not succumbed because of their spiritual life, their inner life. So we can learn from them. Any questions about this teaching? Yes, this profound teaching of smile.
Well, I just wanted to say that I love the dandelion image, because dandelions, everyone knows, goes to sleep, and then they blow in the wind, right? They get all wet. And they grow like crazy. I mean, like my mother in New Jersey has them. And I'm like, you go, a dandelion, because it'll go in everybody's neighbor's yards. And the idea that that's where his smile is, that it's going to just so easily be spread, just is really wonderful to me.
Any other comments on questions about the practice of smile? Yes.
I just off a comment. I read this before from Thich Nhat Hanh about the smile. And I took it as a conscious practice when I go run in the try to smile and say hello to everybody that I see. It's not dark, if it's not light out in the morning, I tend not to do it. But once it starts to get light,
can't smile in the dark.
It can make people, I found it makes people laugh. But otherwise, I'm here, and actually, it's kind of like its own reward, because a lot of times you get a dazzling smile back. Sometimes I pass people two or three times, not on the same day, but over a period of time. And the third or fourth time, it acknowledges fine. It's a part of my running to do that.
So just for the recording, I know Bill's, just for the recording, David just sharing about that he's made a practice of smiling when he runs and smiling at people and notice that it feels good to him and people even respond. So it is a, because people these days are what? They are so stressed out. They're so self-absorbed. They're so serious. They're so, you know what I mean? I mean, it's like, yeah, so it's good to smile at people. In the store, people, you know, people you pass. You don't want them to smile too broadly. They may wonder what's going on, but just a half smile. Good. Smile. Any other questions about the practice of smile? Everybody's going to practice it? Half smile. And again, this is not like don't worry, be happy. I mean, this is not like, which has its own wisdom. But I mean, this is something, again, that comes out of an inner kind of knowing, an inner kind of peace, an inner kind of well-being. You know, I often say that the half smile, you know, in Buddhism, they talk about mudras. Mudras are these various kinds of hand positions that have all kinds of meaning in meditation. But I think the half smile is a mudra. It's a mudra of well-being. It signifies, you know, in this moment, no matter what's going on, no matter what has gone on in the past meeting up to a minute ago, no matter what's going on in the future is anything that's going to happen a minute from now, but in this moment, right, each of us have the capacity of letting go of our personal drama, relaxing, opening, smiling. That signifies, I am present. I am here. I've come out of my drama. I've come out of my self-absorption. Everybody knows what self-absorption is like? It just goes on and on. Have you noticed that? It just goes on and on. And we're very sick people. Because even if it's a bad one, we still play it out, right? Over and over and over. Angers and fears and worries and despairs and, right? We'll just play it over and over and over again. It strikes me as kind of sad, isn't it? Because most of these situations that we're playing over and over again were pretty miserable the first time they happened. You know, in reality. I mean, you know, years ago when I was a therapist, I used to say to clients, I'd say, you know, it's sort of like people, you know, it's like you go, well, it's a, I don't know, people don't do it anymore. This was the days when you used to go to the stores and take out the videos. You know, it's sort of like, you know, you go to the video store, you take out a video, you take it home, it's the worst movie you've ever seen, and then you just play it every day. You know, it's like, if somebody told you that, you'd say, that's sick. Right? You know, this video, it makes you hate it. Just makes you miserable, and yet you keep playing it over and over again. I mean, return it. Take it back. Right? So this is the untrained mind. The untrained mind, we don't know better. The mind just takes this stuff and runs with it. But as one develops oneself through the practices of meditation and mindfulness and gets some strength of mind, some capacity of mind, one and some understanding where one actually... See, mindfulness allows us to say what? You know, right now in our community, a larger Florida community of mindfulness, we have these intensive periods. We're now having an intensive period. We have about 58 people involved in a 10-week intensive called a Transforming Personal Suffering. And, you know, one of the things we are working on is being able to name things as suffering. Such as when I am irritated, I am suffering. When I am worrying, a little anxious, I am suffering. When I am down, I am suffering. See, because a lot of these kind of everyday negative mind states, we consider what? Normal. Right? We consider normal. We don't label it as suffering. We don't label it as I've moved away from a place of well-being and ease of mind. And I'm experiencing a mind state that is constricted and that has a flavor that does not produce ease and well-being in my heart and mind, right? In Buddhism, that's called dukkha. It's often translated as suffering, but it means I'm off. It really, it's often the wheel, you know, the wheel that doesn't run true on its axle. You know, it's got a little wobble in it. There's a little friction in it. And the ride is not smooth. That's, in Buddhism, dukkha. D-U-K-K-H-A, which is often translated as suffering. But it doesn't really mean suffering. Because when we think of suffering, we think of something like big. It can be big. But dukkha, at its very essence, means, you know, it's like I'm off. Things aren't going right. And so to be able to know and to label that as I am experiencing dukkha brings us to the possibility of doing what? Of changing. But there has to be that mindfulness of emotions that allows us to say, this is what's going on in me now. And there's a cause for it. And if I can understand that's what's going on and I'm willing to stop. That should be another. After smile, there should be another one that says what? Stop. Just stop. Right. If your wheel is not running true, if the ride's getting a little bumpy, I mean, don't we learn that in driver's ed? Do you keep driving on the tire? No. What happens if you drive on a flat tire?
Bend.
What?
Bend.
It could get worse, right? It caused big trouble, right? So better to what? Stop. And if you can't change the tire, at least you can do is what? Temporarily inflate it. So it works. But we don't do that. Our life begins to get a little emotionally rocky. We begin to experience emotional afflictions. And what do? We keep driving. Right? We keep driving. And then the second wheel goes out. And we just keep driving. Right? And it's finally when the ride has gotten miserable enough, then we what? We finally stop. But look what it takes. Right? So we need to bring mindfulness in our life that allows us to develop the capacity to be aware. And you can only do that if you stop. I remember Thich Nhat Hanh, when he heard that, you know, what's a You know that, that I don't know if it's an American expression, you know, where we say, don't just stand there, do something, right? Isn't that? Don't just stand there, do something. When he heard that, he said, no. He said, stop doing things, stand there. That was his, he kind of turned it around. I mean, it was his interest. And he's, you know, he says, no, when everybody is running around, stop, you know. He would often say, you know, because in this, I think it was the late 70s or early 80s, there were the boat people. You know, there was a massive exodus of people from Vietnam who were called the boat people. And they had very difficult situations because they had to cross the sea there. And not only were there all kinds of, there were pirates and all that, but also there were storms and, you know, all kinds of. And he would use the example, he would say, when everybody on the boat is panicking, right? When everybody on the boat is scared, somebody has to be willing to stop and be not scared for the sake of the others. Right? And he would say that, you know, to practitioners, that's our job, right? We have to be the ones who have the capacity to stop. When everybody's losing their head, when everybody's lost in the melodrama, right? Somebody's got to say, stop. Let's not, you know, let's not go any further down this road. Lots of times, families, couples, relationships, they get into situations, interactions, which are productive of suffering, right? And nobody says what? Stop. Right? Because if we continue down this road, it's only going to create more what? Suffering. Stop. Same way with mind states. You know, we get a little bug about something. Something's bugging us. Something's a little irritation, anger, resentment, a little worry, anxiety, a little, you know. And if we don't stop and we keep going, it could become something of significance. So we need to learn to be able to say to ourselves what? Stop. Let go for a moment. Come back to yourself. Come back to your breath. Come back to your body. What?
And smile.
And smile. And if you can't smile, go look for a dandelion. Go look for a flower. You know what I mean? And I don't just say that as a joke. I mean, I mean that. We have to be present to ourselves. We have to know what we're going through. And we have to know what kind of medicine we need. Right? And it has to be the right medicine. And sometimes, you know, coming back to ourselves and just taking three breaths and breathing in, I'm aware, and breathing in, breathing out, I calm my body. You know what I mean? Sometimes that can do it. But sometimes we've gone a little too far, so we have to put everything down and go for a walk. Right? Find a dandelion. Find a sundown. Find a child. Something that restores us. We have to cut that connection to that self-absorbed drama that is continuing to create deeper suffering for ourselves. You know, I've often said to people, you know, who are caught in some kind of drama of anger or resentment, you know, I'd say to them, you know, how long are you going to play this? I mean, at some point, you're going to stop, right? I mean, you're not going to do this one for the next 25 years, are you? And they'd say no. So at some point, you're going to stop this, right? And they would all say, yeah, I'm sure at some point. Well, you know, why don't you stop it now? I mean, you know, at some point you're going to stop it, right? Right? I mean, you know, you don't want to stay in this mind state for the rest of your life, do you? No. All right. So you know you're going to stop it. Why don't you stop it now? I mean, how many times do you have to repeat it before you get it? But we are again, it's not that we want to suffer. You know, there are some people who believe human beings, you know, have some kind of psychological systems that believe, you know, people are kind of masochistic. They want to, I don't believe that. I think people want to be happy. They don't know how to be. That's it. They don't know how to be. Nobody wants to suffer. I mean, that would really be sick, right? But we don't know how to not suffer. We don't know how to stop suffering. We don't know how to stop creating suffering for ourselves or suffering for those even we love and care about. But that is what a spiritual path helps us. That's how it helps us. Because we understand that there is a way. There are teachings, there are practices that can help us learn how to stop, how to deal with emotional afflictions, how to deal with a runaway mind, right? How to create happiness for ourselves. That's what a spiritual path. Spiritual path is not some kind of metaphysical, abstract, otherworldly, esoteric, something we do somewhere, you know, in a meditation hall or an ashram or a yoga studio. You know, it's not like that. Real spirituality is something that's engaged in the immediacy of our lives and speaks to, right, our self-created drama and tells us and shows us and teaches us how to heal what needs to be healed, how to transform what needs to be transformed. So please, so this coming week, one word, the teaching of smile, the deeper meaning of it, the deeper practice of it, but also the manifestation, how it appears on your lips. Just practice it for one week. And I'm actually going to be here again next week, so I'll be interested in your experiments with the practice of smile. And then, you know, if you want to go back to scowling the week after, that's fine. But maybe, how about 1 week experiment to practice this teaching? And if you can't find the smile within you, go look for a dandelion. So we'll stop here. Thank you.